Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Greasy Pigeon Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Sullivan. With me, as always, wearing the festive fun shirt, enjoying himself on a Tuesday, the one and only Kevin Trussler. Kevin, how you feeling today, bud?
If I really, really want to tell you how I feel, you know, those dang Buffalo Bills. They Ooh. Break hearts, bro. They break hearts. And actually, a little bummed that they fired their coach. Honestly, I thought they pulled the trigger a little too quick on that. I know that, you know, he took them not to the promised land, but he got them close. And, you know, I think he deserved at least another 24, 48 hours. But, you know, I'm not the one stroking the check. But you got to be feeling pretty good. Your Pats, man.
Pats are good. You know, it's happy, happy times in New England. You know, they like they said, there's some second graders whose long, arduous drought of never seeing the Pats in the AFC Championship game is over. So, you know, we've crossed that, check that box for the Bostonians where, you know, it's, you know, you only had to be about 7 years old to get back to the AFC Championship game since you last saw one. So we're doing okay in New England. Things are okay.
Has it really been that long?
Something like that. I don't quite remember, but it, you know, basically the joke is it's a very short period of time that we're back back in that game.
It is because Buffalo's been at the top and guess what? They've gotten being
zero,
at the top.
0.0. And I did see another stat that if it's not the Chiefs, well, the AFC Championship game for the last like 18 years or some crazy number has included the Chiefs, the Pats, or the Jets. And the Jets, I think, had that 1 year where they made it or 2 years or whatever it was. But basically, it's been the rest of the conference fighting for one spot, not two, right? In the division, conference for the last whatever years.
I think the Bills have made the conference fun.
No, right. Wrong. But they played Kansas City, right? So Kansas City has made it. So like it's included one of those teams for that long, like just to show you. And we all know, you know, the Pats, you know, made it 8 years in a row or something crazy like that, right? So it's just amazing that keeps getting locked down. And the games were crazy, man, across the turnovers in both games on Sunday was nuts. Or I should say the late game, the Bills game, and then the Pats game, and then the come from behind stuff earlier in game one on Saturday. Like just incredible drama in the NFL playoffs to start.
The way the Texans and the Pats played, I swear no one wanted the ball.
Correct.
Man. I think
exactly.
Okay, non-biased. Is that an interception on the Bills at the end there?
Here's what I don't like. So my eye tells me no because he's got the ball and he's down and he's being touched. But because they've convoluted the freaking catch and like even with the one-handed grab in the Patriots game where he goes into the end zone and the ball hits the ground, but really doesn't move, but moves, but doesn't move. And I'm sitting here, I'm like, they could call that a catch too.
But I thought that was a more correct call. And that's not being a homer.
Right.
Honestly.
Yeah.
You got two cheeks on the turf with the ball in your gut.
Yeah.
And you're being touched. Last I checked, you're down.
I think and I would agree with all of those things. And like I said, it's so hard to answer because your eye says, it's funny, in real time, it looks like an interception because it happens so fast, right? They go to the ground and the other guy comes out with the ball clean and you're like, oh, that's an interception. Then you watch it frame by frame, which changes everything, right? The frame by frame replay ruins the replay because you can then circumcise the mosquito, to quote the great Mike Felger in Boston, and spend all the time in there trying to figure out what you want to do and what you want to think it means when you see it. So when he goes down and the hand comes off the ball, then now he doesn't have firm possession, and that's when it comes out. Like that's why it becomes so backwards.
Though, right?
But if he doesn't have possession, then it's an incomplete pass. So it gets so deep, and that's why I hate it. Just tell me what a catch is. And stop trying to make it fit, like just make it fit and be done with it. And stop trying to, again, circumcise the mosquito.
And that's where baseball has sort of gotten it right with the frame by frame, with the bases and everything. I know it's a little bit different. You know, more importantly, like I feel so bad for Bo Nix, man. How you break your ankle on the second last play. I didn't even see it because I was already, you know, let's say I wasn't happy, you know. But I was like, did he really break his ankle just trying to get it to the center of the field for the kick? And no. And I'm gutted for the kid because he played his ass off. And, you know, for him not to have a chance to play, it's sickening. You know, you hate injuries are part of sports. But you don't want to see your stars go down. You don't want to see your quarterbacks. You don't want to see your star goalies, your star centers, your star wingers. You know, just tough. Just tough.
It is tough for sure. And you know, you look at, you know, Bo Nix getting hurt on what, from what they want you to believe was that play where he goes to the middle and there was kind of a push, right? The Bills kind of pushed through, but it was just a pile of bodies. Could he have got rolled up on and had something snap? Yeah. Now adrenaline's running. He finishes the game. He does the post game interview. You know, he may maybe had some of that discomfort and like figured it was nothing major and then swelled up. Hey, let's take an X-ray to make sure. Oh shit. And it's probably a hairline or something, but
right.
Nothing you can play a full game on, mobility and all that stuff. So it does, you know, it sucks. And you look at, you know, him getting hurt in that situation. And then you look at congratulations, Indiana University, what Fernando Mendoza did last night, running 25 yards, taking three hits, diving Superman, getting spun around, holding on to the football to put them up there by, I think it was 11 at that point, right? Kind of sealed the game for him. And I know it came down late, right? Carson Beck had a chance with Miami, but I mean, what a run Indiana went on, like crazy.
I got to be honest, I watched the Indiana run, but I did not watch the end of the game last night for it being a Monday, and it looked like Indiana was starting to run away with it. Glad Miami made a game of it. In fact, I thought Miami might upset them because early on in the year when they were playing and they're playing at their high level, they played FSU, both were undefeated. They're in Tallahassee.
Right. Yep.
They absolutely destroyed them. Like it looked like, you know, a college team against a Pop Warner team. So I think the nerves got the best of them at the beginning and, you know, they made it a game at the end, but the better team won. I mean, Indiana was a wagon this year. And well, I'm an SEC guy.
And they ran over everybody on the way to the title game. So they clearly showed what they had. And even when that game was struggling to score early, that drive Indiana went, like, they, you know, 14 or 15 plays. They took almost the whole quarter, went down and scored the touchdown. Like, that drive was a man's drive. And I looked at that. And then Miami really couldn't get it going. Like, Indiana could stuff the run out and kind of slow the run down. And they were struggling to get the ball moving. And I was like, okay, here it is. Like, they felt each other out. They're over those jitters. And now Indiana's going to just start turning the screws. And that's old school Big Ten hockey, just running between the tackles, dropping back with some short, kind of short intermediary passes. I mean, that's like, you know, Indiana, Nebraska, they're going to play a game, win 10-7, you know, like that's that sort of football.
Playing in shitty weather, except they're in Miami.
Correct.
And yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But yeah, Fernando Mendoza, right, Heisman Trophy winner, goes back to his hometown, plays against the school that he loved growing up. His mom's in the stand. They showed her a bunch of times, right? You know, she's battling MS. We all know what a horrible disease that is. She's up there in the stands, you know, watching her son do the thing. You know, she was there and she was able to celebrate, understand what was going on. Right. But, so she's, the family's living that, going through that, you know, he knows that, right. You always know what's going on. So just awesome. Right. It's just a great story. I saw a thing on Barstool. This story in sports can't story anymore.
No.
Like that's the pinnacle of the story. Right. So good for him.
Yeah.
Good for Indiana. And like the coach said at the end of the game, good for their fans. The losingest program in college football history, and you're now on top of the world. So congratulations to Indiana.
Yep, absolutely. And that kid is so well spoken. So well spoken. You know, his parents got to be proud.
Yeah,
for sure.
For sure. Speaking of parents who are proud, how do you think Bobrovsky and Nedeljkovic's parents are feeling after watching Bob do the 200-foot sprint in goalie gear to jump on Alex Nedeljkovic? I know you all know what I'm talking about. Sharks, Panthers in Florida, scrum behind the net of the Sharks. The goalie, Alex Nedeljkovic, gets into it. I say throwing some. Kevin says lightly flapping the glove.
I'm looking at it right now. Well, I would say flapping the glove a little bit at the players before Bob comes down. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is Nedeljkovic, is he for Russia?
No, I believe he's like a Slovak or one of those Slovenia, like old Russian guard, right? But not quite brotherhood, not quite brethren.
So he has more to lose, right? I don't know what their Olympic roster looks like. Bob has nothing to lose. Now, Bob's going to be on the beach for 2 weeks because Russia's not part of the Olympics, right? So, you know, we'll see what happens out of this. Yeah, the boys got into a good one, and I like to see a good old goalie tilt. I think everyone loves to see a goalie tilt.
And it was a good goalie tilt too. Like they threw some shot, they threw some haymakers. Wow. Okay, let's completely turn in our hockey cards all the way across the board. Now that I see this, I do know this, and I can't believe that Alex Nedeljkovic is an American, born in Ohio. Born in Ohio.
Sorry, so, you know,
absolutely.
The name.
Take the card back. I guarantee you he's got Slovakian lineage and heritage in his life, but poor guy's an American. So absolutely apologize to Alex Nedeljkovic for not knowing that. But he's also not going to the Olympics because he's not one of the three USA hockey goalies.
I was just
going
to say he has nothing to lose either.
Correct.
No disrespect to him, but yeah, he has absolutely nothing to lose. And why not give the fans a show? You know,
now I will say, you know, he's actually the backup in San Jose, right? So Yaroslav Askarov, who is Russian, is their starting goaltender. He's 16-12 with an 891 and a 352. Nedeljkovic has played eight less games with a 296 and an 896. So Nedeljkovic is the bigger name and is the better stats, but has less games played. I guess I don't know. Was he hurt for part of the year and he's coming back, right? I don't know the backstory there. So maybe he is their number one, but he's definitely going to be relied on in San Jose, and they're holding a playoff spot right now.
Yep.
They're the number three team in the Pacific. So, you know, with the Panthers being where they are, you know, they're 4 points out of the second wild card games, kind of even game numbers.
48
so,
games.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what Buffalo has. So they're kind of tied there. So I don't think they're going to make it, but Chuck's skating again. He comes back. Maybe they get a boost. They get some points. They could climb up, right? Buffalo could lose 13 in a row starting next week. Hey, so you never know.
Sorry, Big D. Love you, brother. But the Olympic break couldn't have come at a worse time. And, you know, I don't wish injuries on anyone. I just hope all Sabres come back healthy.
Yes.
But as, you know, as the luck has been sometimes in the Sabres way, I just wish them very good luck and good play in the Olympics. As my brother said, after the Bills loss, city of losers. And for those from Buffalo, I don't believe that. I still believe it'll be a party when one of those teams win.
Somebody wins. Somebody wins. Well, Kev, as you know, we were golfing not too long ago, and you pulled your Buffalo Bills golf balls out to hit them. And first thing I asked you was, does it always miss to the left, or do you get to sometimes split the uprights with it? So, and based on how the game went, a few lefts and rights, Kev, lefts and rights.
Left ends, rights, and, you know, one shot, one kill. I guess I thought I was hunting.
Yes. Yeah. Good point there. But it's funny, right? So you mentioned Buffalo, you know, let's just for, you know, 5 minutes here, talk a little bit of NHL standings. We are obviously into 2026. The Olympic break is what, about a week away? Olympics start on the 6th of February. Today's date is the 20th of January. So, you know, you're 2 weeks away from the teams, maybe like a week away, because you're gonna have to travel, I guess. So maybe, I guess I don't know when the schedule stops. I could look here real fast on when the schedule breaks, but it's got to be coming up here fairly shortly. 25th, bear with me 1 second. Oh, they go all the way through, Kev. The last day of games is Thursday 2/5.
Wow.
So you know what that means? Okay. I bet you the hockey schedule doesn't start right away. I bet you they start a little late over there.
Yeah.
So yeah. So 2/5 is the last night of games. So yeah. Olympics opening ceremonies is 2/6. The NHL goes on break in 2/6. They have two full weeks left, but you look at where the standings are. Let's start here in Tampa. The Lightning, after tying St. Louis and getting a point out of that game and then losing in overtime and then coming back and getting a win, 13 game points heater puts them top of the Atlantic Division, 64 points, tied with Detroit. Great story out of Detroit. They have three more games played, so a little bit skewed numbers there. But, I mean, Tampa, they're off to a hell of a run right now.
Hey, Eastern, they are 2 points behind the Hurricanes with three games in hand. I mean,
the Lightning are again.
They've been on an incredible heater, and just when you think that, you know, they're going to go to pasture and let the friends from the South take over the state, they're having something to say about that, because they are playing really good hockey right now. And, you know, we talked about it a little bit earlier. Their point differential is just ridiculous.
That's, I mean, plus 46 goal differential is insane, considering Detroit plus 4. Montreal plus 4, and even Carolina plus 28. Like they are by far and away the number one team in the East. And we talk about point differential. Like if we were to spend time, and we won't cause the popsicle headache and break down the wild card right now too deep.
Yeah.
Other than we'll mention the Bruins here in a minute. But you look at the teams in the hunt, you know, Toronto, Philadelphia, the Capitals, they're all within a couple points.
Hey, the Panthers.
Yeah.
They're minus 14, and they're
4 points out with, again, same number of games. Washington's got extra games played. But I look at when push comes to shove, you need to score goals. And if you're and you need to score more than the other team, right? That goes without saying, Bob Uecker. But if you, John Madden, but if you if you're basically breaking even, right? We always use that as a metrics. You're going to have a harder time breaking in to a playoff spot against a team that's already in the green, right? So that's always kind of my take. It was my take last year. It's my take again this year.
Yeah. I mean, hey, I think it was last year, maybe 2 years ago, that Nashville, they went on that run, that big heater that got them into the playoffs.
Yeah. Well, and again, and the Bruins were so negative last year in a goal differential, right? They were 2 points out of playoff spot.
Yep.
And I threw them away February, March, because I kept saying to you, we're minus whatever we were a goal differential. We're not going to break in. We're not going to make it.
Yeah.
We're not going to get in with a goal differential. We're going to get beat out. It's just the way it is. So
the
Bruins finished minus 50 goal differential last season.
Just minus 50. That's a
good
number.
Hold on, but I can look again. The NHL website's awesome. So this time last year, they were holding wild card two. We're talking about the Boston Bruins now, guys. Sorry that we're bouncing around.
Yeah.
52 points. This time last year, the Bruins were 52 points holding the second wild card at minus 20 goal differential, right?
With the staff that they had.
Correct.
Marchand.
Yeah, because
Carlo.
Yeah, correct. And then you go to the end of the season, April 17th, they then dropped. So Montreal made it. So here's where I was wrong. Montreal made it in with a minus 20. Columbus lost it by 2 points with a plus 5. And the Bruins finished second to last after the sellout and all that at minus 50 at the end of the season. So, which I believe was the worst goal differential in all of hockey last year, was minus 50. Oh, no, I take it back. Nashville, Chicago, and St. Louis were really bad.
San Jose,
not St. Louis. So, but definitely worse in the East, right? So it just goes to show you the goal differential matters, and the Tampa Bay Lightning are absolutely crushing in a goal differential. But holy crap. Well, it's good.
And the West and the East are like polar opposites, right?
That's
like
where I was going. Colorado's number punches you in the face.
It's, plus 78. Plus 78.
It's incredible. It's an incredible number.
They're saying that they've got the Bruins all-time point leading regular season in sight.
One, whatever it was, right?
47 games played, 34-5-8. I mean, it's
that's what you see
insane.
In like an unbalanced like youth or junior division, right? Like the Vernal Oilers do this out in the Pacific or out in the West the USPHL Premier, right? Like the unbalanced division, they go kill everybody and never lose, right? So it's amazing. But again, I don't show me in the playoffs. You've got to get there, right?
Get in the dance. And when I'm looking at the top eight in the Western, would you tell me that Anaheim has that eighth spot? Yeah, they do. Wow. They are holding down the eighth spot right now with a negative 12.
That's insane. Yep. And San Jose is holding down the third spot in the Pacific with a negative 17. So, you know, it's, but they're again at 53 points. The Pacific is so weak. Vegas leads the Pacific with 60 points. Dallas is in third in the Pacific with 63. Like it's just that the divisions within that conference are again, uneven. And that happens from time to time. You get a great division, you get a bad. I mean, look at the NFC South. The Panthers win at 8-9, get into the dance.
At the AFC East for the longest time, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and that goes both ways. Like Buffalo ran shot, now we've got those freaking Pats back.
That's it. We'd like to have that back for sure. So fun little playoff talk. I mean, the Lightning are on a heater. We'll have to keep checking in with them and keep watching everybody else. And the Bruins, 8-1-1 in the last 10, 6 in a row, got them from out of the dance to leading the wild card by a point.
They got to get better on the road. I watched a couple of their road games and, they're 500 on the road. And that's where if you can steal some points on the road, that's huge.
Well, I think in our next show here, and I promise you fans, we will get better on a more regular posting schedule. The holidays got definitely in our way as far as some scheduling and some, you know, work and life things and travel. So definitely want to get more on a regular schedule, and the trade deadline, you know, looming after the Olympic break. So I think our next show will probably talk Olympics. I think that's a great conversation to have, really try to break down some of those teams and hopefully see some of the tournament start and break that down and get into it a little bit. And then definitely talk some trade deadline from both the Lightning and the Bruins standpoint, because I feel like the Lightning, like always, Breezeball is going to look to probably add a piece, make them even better. And if you can't sell or stay pat, if you're Boston now, and there were some rumors they maybe had a deal done and then someone threw a first round pick out on the table. I don't remember all the specifics now, but you know, I don't love throwing first round picks around, but the Lightning did it, helped them for four seasons in a row. Right. So never know.
It depends on what that return is, right?
It's true. I mean, the Lightning got lucky where they were able to sign some of those players long term, and then add pieces like Getzel, right, and make the smart move. And maybe by not having Marchand here, that opens you up a little bit. I have to go and look at cap space and all that. So more to come on NHL trades, more to come on the Olympics.
To come for my mom and the Leafs. You know,
yes. Oh, right, the Leafs. There. Yeah, we'll have to check Leafs. In. Yeah, we'll check in on Miss Jude up there in Ontario at some point, see what she thinks about the Leafs, and definitely break down as we get closer to the Super Bowl early February. Lots coming up. Great time of year if you're a sports fan. Fortunately, it kind of gets quiet after that. You get the NHL, you know, which love, of course. I'm not a basketball guy, so I'm not sitting there watching all the basketball games on TV, college and pro. Like, not my jam.
Yeah.
So kind of gets quiet until baseball, but actually this year, I said to you, I became a fan again of the game last year. So I'm actually looking forward to baseball season starting up in the spring.
I'm looking forward to the bobsled big time.
Bobsled. Yeah. You did two man luge guy. You are, I think, is really what it is. Big two man luge. Yeah. You like to be on the,
you
like,
and me, buddy.
Be on the Greasy top pigeon of the luge. Buckets. Yeah, that's exactly. All right. We're going to save all of you from listening to the rest of this. Take a short break. We come back. If you remember our last show, we talked about some drama out of Central Florida with Seyhoff. The appeals have been sent. The decisions have been made. And wouldn't you know it, Seyhoff made up some rules again. We'll break it all down next in The Nest. Welcome back, everybody. So like I mentioned before the break, we started our last show talking heavily on the Seyhoff drama out of Central Florida and a player who is a 14U age group player made and played up on a 16AA team out of the Central Florida Bears organization because of circumstances around that situation. And I don't have the details. And even if I did, I wouldn't lay them out here because I don't really think that's A, our business, and B, it really doesn't matter because the player was playing up. He tried it. It didn't work. Went down to the only available A team in the division, which according to Seyhoff's own bylaws, orange is the name for the highest level league, black will be the name for the middle league, and white will be the name for the lowest league. The lowest league restrictions are in place for teams at the lowest A level league in any age division, right? We just determined that white is the name for the lowest A league. All teams entered in the lowest A level league in a division are not permitted to have any players rostered on an alliance team, an independent AAA program, or an AA team in the previous or current season. So why do I say that? Because it doesn't apply in this situation, right? Don't misconstrue the lowest level in the division to mean that they had a orange team or a black team and that's the lowest level in their organization. No. The division, the 14UA division, right? That age group has a white division, right? Does that make sense? Am I being clear on that, Kev? Is that you follow the bouncing ball there?
It's 100%. And he's 14 playing up in 16.
Right. And he wasn't going to the lowest level team at the age group. He went to the other available team in his division, which was not labeled a white team. So he goes down there. He plays four games. So we again got some more info after we post our last show. Played four games. They won four games. And then the complaints came in and they called in the integrity because he's too good. If he was on the team during the what do you call it? Placement tournaments, right? Parity tournaments, we used to call them up north. Then the team would have placed higher into the black division and they wouldn't have been in the orange division. So it's making the people in the orange division mad, which we broke all that down, right? If one player is truly making your whole team that good, better than everybody else, then the other teams, we can get into the validity of having those teams at those levels anyway. Should you even have three divisions at a level? Should we have the one division and then just play rec hockey? That's not the conversation we're having today, but you and I made those decisions very clear on that kind of last time, Kev.
Hockey is one of those games that one player should not be able to dominate in a league, like, and kill everyone.
If you get surprised, if you get surprised because a player shows up, right? It wasn't there. Oh, hey, got this new kid, whatever. And you play one of the lower, already established, weaker teams in that division. Then, yes, any player. I mean, we used to have players, Kev, that could score 3-4 goals in a game. They weren't changing the scope of life for us. They had a good game against a weaker opponent, right? Now, where great players shine is when you play the harder opponent, yes, and the harder opponent is better and they take away the time and space, then that player can either still make moves and score a couple goals or facilitate the movement of the puck and other people score goals. But to say that that player was single-handedly walking on top of the water, the frozen water of the rink, on top of all these teams, that's going to change the dynamic of the entire season. I don't believe it, and I will never believe it. Even if I saw video and the kid was really good, I would still say that's his age group. That's where he belongs. That's where he should play. So my mind hasn't changed on this.
And as a coach, that kid now becomes an extension of your coaching staff.
If you're coaching the right way, that's correct. Absolutely correct.
You are going to give that kid as much rope as he can in the right way to teach the game the way it should be played. And you're gonna hold him accountable or her accountable to making the right play every single time, even though he can go or she could go and smoke someone and go around him. Because we talked about it earlier today. It doesn't get easier the higher you get up. And if you don't learn those fundamentals and if you don't learn how to play and make the right move at that time, then you're just hurting yourself. You're hurting your teammates too from getting better. And, you know, it's amazing when you see a kid that is talented, that gives the puck maybe to a lesser skilled player in the right way, and it goes back the other way and it just comes back. It's like magic. Right? It's just like magic. That's teaching the game. Those that are the superstars that score the 90 goals in one season, or, you know, they look off the dish and they're always shooting. Good luck. I just wish you good luck, because it doesn't get easier. You know, if you don't learn how to play the game the right way and different styles of the game, we started the show with the Indiana Hoosiers, worst team in football for the longest time. And they came in and punched people in the mouth all year long. It was fun to watch, but they still played fundamentally sound football.
Correct.
And I love watching teams when they play fundamentally sound. And quite frankly, biased, I'm a Jays fan. It's why I fell in love with baseball again, because they played the game the way it was taught. You know, get them on, get them over, get them in, as far as like offense goes, right. You know? Single, yep. Bunt them over, single them in, no different. And it's been a few years since I've coached, and maybe I'm a dinosaur, but at the same time, I still don't want to see toe drags at the blue. I don't want to see toe drags at the red. The only time I want to see that is in, it's desperation at the end. Desperation at the end. But if you don't learn to play the game the right way, and I felt, and not knowing the whole situation with Seehoff, I felt they gave that kid a disservice, and I don't know the family, don't know the kid, I don't know anyone involved, but I just, as someone who promotes the game, I just feel that they really took it away from him to be a leader.
Yeah. And to, so, yeah, sorry, Kev, go ahead.
Well, just teach, just be a leader and teach and show them the right way and make them better, make them better.
Yeah, there was definitely an opportunity. You know, that's a really great, you know, kind of idea, thought process from your angle that honestly I didn't consider. I've been thinking of this so kind of black and white and policy and rule related. Obviously feeling for the kid, because, you know, who knows, he probably went down that first weekend playing with his friends again and was just free and released and stopped gripping the stick so tight and was actually having fun, right? Oh, that, because remember, people, this is a game. We're supposed to have fun when we're 12, 14, 16 years old.
It's a game at the end.
See?
Yes.
Right? Like, I still have fun when I'm out there playing D novice somewhere, which, by the way, I need a spot on a team. If anybody has one for a, if you want a really shaky left shot forward, I'm your guy. As long as it's in Wesley Chapel, I'm not driving to like Brandon. So Sorry, but I digress. So it's a fun game, right? So anyway, let's get to the Sehoff piece. The people closest to the situation went through the Sehoff website, and I've talked to a couple, and they've had the same result of emailing certain people I have, crickets. A couple emails that they actually sent utilizing the emails listed on the website come back as non-deliverable. I've sent a few emails in the past asking, you know, to get people on. We did the Longwood conversation, AAA. I wanted to get a guest from Sehoff on, no response. So very, you know, cavernous responses to some people and say, I'm not calling. I didn't email everybody. So, you know, Jeff Ning may be better at responding than others. I did not email Jeff Ning, right? But from what I understand, and I agree, those email addresses don't always get answered well. So they find the appeals forms and go through the processes and submit the appeals. And the letter they get back just before the turn of the calendar gives a bunch of bylaws and talks about submission dates and 14 days and whatever, and says this SFHL decision was delivered to the Bears on December 4th. Even if this decision, that was the initial decision on him having to pull off that team. Okay, that was the initial decision date. Even if this decision was appealable, so they're telling you this, none of this matters.
Yeah.
It was needed to be received by December 18th. The date submitted is listed as December 19th on the notice to appeal form and was received by certified mail on December 23rd. Both dates exceed the time to successfully submitted appeal. So even if we're doing this for the kids, but you didn't get to the post office in time, so none of this matters, right? So that's the first double bird that Sehoff is giving to the Bears organization and this kid and the family right out of the gate. Then comes the Chris Farley already on his knees kicking the nuts to the Bears organization. Executive committee determination. 1. CFHC Bears 14U A Black Team may roster the player for the remainder of the season. However, so you read that and you're like, oh, sweet. They're going to let him on the team. That's the team. That's
is the lower, orange is the higher.
Correct. Black is correct. The level they have at the Bears organization.
Yeah.
Okay. So he can go back to that team that he originally was fully legally allowed to go to, that Sehoff signed off on originally because it's legal. Okay. Let's not forget that part. He went down there. They requested him to go down there. They put him on the roster. Sehoff approved it. He went and played. Then they said he couldn't play. So now they say he can play. However, all regular season games will remain sanctioned and on the schedule. However, the results will not be counted towards state championship qualification for any teams in the league. So basically, everybody that plays the Bears don't get those wins counted for them, and the Bears don't get any credit for those games that they play.
So at least they actually did it for both teams then. I thought maybe they just eliminated the Bears and they gave them 2 points for the dub. Nope, it's
basically all games are sanctioned, but they're basically scrimmages at that point. So they don't benefit.
Okay.
So everyone can play hockey.
Kills everyone.
But it kills everyone. Hurts the entire division now across the board because it kills everybody. So now you can't, if you need 4 points and you've got the Bears on your schedule, it doesn't matter. You can't get there now, right? So like it kills the whole thing. So garbage decision there across the board. And then they give then it says, I love this too, alternative options available to the player. Parentheses, to be clear, the 16U options are not SFHL recommendations, but all options below are permissible. Get the fuck out of here. They're not the options how did they word that? They're not the recommendations, except you can't play on that other team. So do you mean they're not the recommendation? That's all you have.
We're going to rate this, but we're not going to recommend it.
What are we doing? So, okay. So here's the non-recommended options that are the only options for this kid to play legal sanctioned team games the rest of the season.
Yeah. Lawyer two came in and was like, shit, I got to pick this one up.
Correct. Okay. So now he may go back. Okay. So in violation of Sehoff's own bylaws that once you're removed from a roster for any reason, you're not allowed to go back to it. Except now he can go back to the 16UAA roster he came from. SFHL executive committee is willing to grant a one-time exception for the no return rule. Yeah. Okay. Whatever. Cause it benefits Sehoff.
Did they play the hockey puck game?
Probably.
Yeah.
And if you picked it out of the helmet. Yeah.
Yep.
We're going to pick out of the helmet and go back to this one. So we're going to ignore the rule, change the rule, say we're going to accept the rule after some random 14 day number. Not that it matters because it doesn't matter. We're going to make the change. So let's just create a new rule to make it work for us. So we're going to allow him to go back to the team he came from that he didn't like, that was not a good fit. potentially not safe, potentially safe sport violation, potentially USA Hockey violation, right? I'm projecting, I don't know, but something was wrong there. So go back there. Great. Thank you, Seyhoff. That's awesome. Two, he may roster with the 16 UA Bears team. Okay. So I don't know anything about the 16 UA Bears team. Let's assume that they're...
What color?
That's what it, color? Right? No idea. So he's allowed... So because he's 14, he can go play... And if you're on the 16 UA Bears team and you guys are 15-0, I have no knowledge of this, so I'm going to just say this. Take no offense.
Hey, win it all.
1-14, Central Florida Bears team gets to add this kid, and he's better than all the other 16 UA team. So that team can go on a run and win 8 games in a row and go to qualify for states with this kid on it because he's playing up a division. So that's okay. But because he dominates at his age group, that's not okay. Like, the disconnect there is so wide. Like, if you're listening and you're like, well, he's playing up, so clearly he's not going to be that good. If he's so good to change an entire division's trajectory towards the playoffs at his age group, he's probably going to be pretty good at the A level of the next age group, knowing and playing Florida hockey for a long time. There's every once in a while a really good A team, but you know where all the really good 6 players go at that age group? Double A. So you've got the kids, and again, this is not disrespectful to the kids playing A hockey. Like, there's a spot for everybody. But my point is, if you're comparing this kid, which supposedly is so good that you're going to throw him on an A team, even at the higher division, Kevin, am I wrong? I don't see that being a good fit for that league either.
No, it goes back exactly to what I said. Let him go play with the kids his own age. And he's 14. He's 14.
Yes.
Maybe 13 turned 14 during the year. Like, it's a joke. It's a joke. I would love to feel the phone call and just hear you try to explain it to me. As a parent myself, where if my child wants to go play at his own age group and doesn't really care about the wins or the losses, just wants to play hockey.
And I'll tell you, I've had a couple parents, and not a lot. I won't make this sound like I've had 100 parents reach out to me. We've had a couple parents after the last show email, DM the page and actually say, I'm a parent of team X or team Y. They beat us. He beat us, right? I do not agree. I agree with you, even though one of them said, even though our loss, would knock us out of the playoffs based on how they beat us and whatever, I agree that he should be able to play with his age group because he's only, 14 years old. So like there are people that get this, right? And how this works. So, and the last piece to tie on the alternative options, and I do, and this is a no-brainer, except this is really crappy for Florida hockey because this gets into what makes Florida hockey the still have the problems it has. He may pursue opportunities with a 14 UA orange team or a 14 UA double A team where his demonstrated competitive level would be appropriately assigned with the placement event's intent. So again, they're calling into question the integrity of the parity placement event weekend, that his being there would have single-handedly catapulted that team into a whole nother bracket, a whole nother division, which is a really good precedence to say that your whole team relies on that one kid. So you guys, none of you matter. Maybe the goalie, he has to stop a couple pucks, right? But according to this kid, never lets the puck off his stick. He's never on the bench. There's never anybody else on the ice. It's just they give it to him and they all peel off and they watch him play hockey. And he probably is the goalie too. Like, based on how good he is, he probably runs skates back and plays net when the other team has the puck. So you don't need anybody else on this kid's team, just him, because he's that good. So he can only play at the highest level because that's what's fair. Like, it makes no sense to me. And not only that, it's one thing, and I'll let you talk in 2 seconds. It's one thing if this was a kid out of Wesley Chapel, because you got Wesley Chapel, Oldsmar, Clearwater, Brandon, and even Ellington's an hour away. You've got not a whole lot in Central Florida, buddy. That's a lot of windshield time to get to another organization.
From the Bears to Kissimmee, you think it's close.
And we don't even know what they have. And I'm not up on the, I don't know if Kissimmee's running for organizations this year. Like, I know Space Coast has some teams, but that could be an hour and a half away to Space Coast, right? Like, you're not going down south. That's 3 hours. You're not coming to Wesley Chapel. That's easily an hour and a half. An I-4, you're going to take an I-4 to come to practice at night. Like, there ain't no way. So it's a non-feasible option because of the geographics of where he is. So I think it's crap. I think what Sejhoff came out with, and there's some more to come. We'll get into it here, but I've been hogging the microphone, and I want your shirt and you to have a voice. So I'm gonna definitely let you chime in here. But I just don't like where the options were. I think, and we're gonna tie this together, and you and I have had some experience with this. I think it's Sejhoff making decisions because certain organizations are tied tighter to the decision-making bodies of Sejhoff, and they cater to the same specific voices and benefit a small number of the greater organizational groups that exist within Florida hockey. That's my thought.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of rubber sometimes in the bylaws of the Sejhoff rules, and that rubber bends depending on what side you're on. And in this case, again, not knowing the kid, not knowing, God forbid he's a 13-year-old playing up as a 14-year-old and not being able to finish out the season with his buddies. But it doesn't make any sense to me. I guess if anything, I'll put a little bit on the parents at the beginning. You know, you got to really sit and look at your kid and say, do you want them to really play up on that AA team? At that age. And if you do, then you better have options down the road as to where your child can go. In this case, it should have been a no-brainer. I mean, logically, and you know, I'd like to think I'm a logic person. If my kid is a 14-year-old, if he decides, let's say the kid gets hurt, breaks an ankle in September.
Correct. Yep.
And is no longer able to play, you know, at the level of the AA. Does the rubber of that bylaw change in the language of that?
Well, like, and that's why that's why I don't like the integrity argument, because you're putting all your horses in, you're literally saying that the team is an orange team, or I'm sorry, the team is a black team. You add one kid, it becomes an orange team. That kid gets hurt, gets sick. They go out of town. They go away. What he's actually a soccer player first and a hockey player second. So his soccer season starts and he misses six games, right? Like whatever, shit happens. So now you've got a team in a whole division that they're only in because of one kid, and that kid's now not there. And the team now loses every game by 5, 6, 7 goals. Well, that's the competitive spirit we're looking for. Thanks for coming, guys. Get your ass blown out every weekend because your one good player isn't there. Like it doesn't hold weight at all.
Yeah. I will give Sejhoff props because we were out of it by the time they decided to go with the levels of where should your team play? And, you know, us as a coaching staff always said, and I've said it before on the show, it's not how you arrive to the dance, it's how you finish at the dance. So, you know, if you come out of the gate with a rough start and you don't get to the level that you thought you should be for Sejhoff, well then at that point when it's set, your goal is to win that level.
Well, let me ask you this then. Okay. So I just thought of this as you were talking. Why isn't this an opportunity possibility, right? So rosters don't lock until December 31st, USA Hockey. You can add players, USA Hockey, until December 31st. I brought it up on the last show. What if a kid moves down? You got the kid that moves down to Florida from Chicago, Boston, Detroit, Minnesota, and he lives essentially moves to Orlando, and that's the organization, and he's 14 years old, so they sign him on the 14-year roster, and he goes out and starts doing the same thing this kid did, right? They're not going to kick him. He didn't break any laws. Is that going to be a problem? And what are you going to do? How do you prove that he's now not allowed to play? Because we signed Cooper Christensen midseason. Kid was a Chicago AAA player, comes down. Bosa are a blue line, definitely got us some wins. Right. We didn't get kicked out of the division. Right. Whatever. So that whole thing is a gray area, because if someone does it, I'd love to see what happens. But two, this kid was added in November. Again, the schedule is kind of wonky because you play every other weekend. So it might have been the end of October into November. It might have been two weekends in November. Not totally sure on the timing, but it was November. They were like six games in when he started playing. If truly he's going to affect the team that much, let's move divisions, guys. Let's leave some scheduling availability and let's start slot. Cause I bet you there's probably a team in the other division that probably could shoot down a division, and you could move a team up a division, and let's start shaking things around. We don't need to be, they do this shit in Boston all the time. There was multiple leagues, gold and black and whatever.
Wow.
And by midseason, it was like, hey, you're too bad for that level. Drop down. You're, you know, undefeated at the lower level. You're moving up, and like you would swap. And that's just how that worked. Like it's not rocket science. It takes a little bit of effort and work, but make it happen.
But it takes everyone to agree with that, specifically the parents, right? They're tied to a letter. They don't care that Johnny is on the double A team. That is O-22.
Oh, no, I'm not even talking dropping the letter. Leave double A. Like, I'm saying, if you're a black team and an orange team, why can't the bottom, if you're, so, if, yeah. like, when, let the CHFC Bears 14U orange team, black team that this kid was on,
okay.
get yep. moved up to black. Everyone, hey, guys, if we're going to go to the black division.
Can they compete, right?
Correct. Yeah. Let's go, right? And then figure out the points thing and whatever you got to do.
It's what Europe does so well with the professional soccer leagues with the relegation, right? Except they do it at the end of the year.
At the end of the season, which is cleaner that way. But you could easily, you could make something work points wise. I mean, what happens in the USPHL when these teams drop out halfway through? Like they figure out who gets points and who doesn't get points, and it gets all the calculations get all redone, and then you keep going and play the rest of the season. It doesn't stop because you have lost a team or whatever. Yeah. Like there's ways to do it.
Where you might run into issues is scheduling of the rinks, right? We've talked about it on multiple shows. Like, you know, we need more rinks in the area. Not to say that they couldn't find the time to move those games around, right?
Well, creative. You may have to play on the weekdays, right, Kev? As we know, which is going to, I think, is where you started to go.
Well, and that's just it. I mean, there was a time that, you know, we decided to go and play in a tournament that involved the Winter Classic out in Dallas. And we needed to reschedule our regular season games. And I believe at the time, I think they were home games for us, but because we wanted the kids to experience the opportunity, bottom line is if you made it to the finals, you played on the Winter Classic ice and you got a ticket to the Winter Classic, which was cool. You know, if you can ever go, if you're going to go in Tampa, it's fantastic. Definitely recommend going. But we as a team decided that, okay, if that's how we're going to do it, then we're going to have to go down to another barn during the week. Beauty of Seehof, I will say this, is they do play the weekends. They do it smart. They try to do two games in one day or try to keep you in one city for a weekend. To go, you know, play at 5:30, 6 o'clock at night with the traffic is a nightmare. And it's a nightmare no matter where you live. But it's a nightmare down here. You know, we decided to do that. We decided to do it. It didn't benefit us, but we still actually had the opportunity. In fact, it benefited you, Jeff, because it was closer to home. but it's one of those things where it's like communication is everything, right? Winning isn't everything. Communication is everything, and it's about the kids.
Well, yeah, and that's just it, Kev. It's about the kids, right? And I think where some of this, you mentioned the rubber, the rules being rubber, right? And we lived two perfect examples of their rubber rules when it comes to game scheduling, right? Where and this goes back to my comment that some organizations are treated differently within Seehof than others. There's not quite the haves and the have-nots, but there's definitely those within the favor and those with outside the favor, right? For sure. And we battled. 1 year was us as teams, and I don't think I was with you, but we were so connected, practiced together, like we felt like we were part of it. You needed to reschedule due to numbers of players being enough to play, but not enough to really go play. That you were low benched, and you requested the games to be rescheduled. And if I'm not, and I believe I have all the emails, but I'm pretty sure the answer, Kev, was basically, we'll see you at, you know, noontime on Saturday. And if you don't show up, it's a forfeit. And that's the end of this conversation. Is that correct?
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
And then fast forward 1 year later, it was 1 year, right? The very next season, or was it 2 years later? Same team, very next season. So same opponent, very next season. Said opponent reaches out day of game and says, because it was one of those where we were playing the kind of round robin weekend, right? So we had team A, then we had team B, and then, you know, A and B played each other, right? And then that sort of deal. So you had, it was around that round robin weekend, you know what I'm talking about. And we're playing the other team, who we didn't like them really as an organization, you know, that hatred kind of thing. Respectfully hatred, but like the team, we butted heads and, you know, all the stuff that goes into it, right? Fine. So, but all of a sudden the team moms start talking, team managers, sorry, start talking, and they both get the emails from said organization requesting cancellation of the game. So the organizations bounded together and said, absolutely not. You have enough players to play. You told us that. So we will see you today for the games. They went to Seehof because he is on the executive board of Seehof, the hockey director of said organization. And wouldn't you know, we got a forced game postponement by the Sayoff, by Jeff Ning, to not play the games that weekend. And then fast forward, based on the bylaws, it's amicable agreement on rescheduling that benefits both teams equally, right? Is that how that was worded?
Amicable in the sense that you use our practice time.
Yes. Well, that's how it ended up. But they wanted to add another game on a weekend, add another game, a third game on a day. They wanted to force this in. And because of tournaments, and it was near the end of the season, both organizations held firm and we pushed back because we both felt like we were getting screwed by Sayoff. And what ended up happening, you just said it. We got the email from Jeff Ning that literally said, and in the top line basically was like, all right, I've had enough. Here's when you're playing. And they took our practice time, both of us, both organizations, and they took the practice time, rescheduled the games, and played up during the weeknights. And to your point about not benefiting us, we were missing players. Our starting goalie was missing because of a trip, a tournament. They were stuck out of town, couldn't be there. So we're down a very important player. And guess who knows, you know, too bad. That's the game. Go play. So to your point, Sayoff continuously, here's the appearance on the outside. And Sayoff, if you're listening to this, let me tell you what the perception is. Maybe I'm wrong, but here's the perception from 99% of parents if I were asking them at the brink. If I go to ringside at Wesley Chapel, top shelf, I mean, and go to Wesley Chapel, top shelf, after a few pops to some of those hockey parents at the end of the day on a Saturday, I guarantee you, I get some good answers on this. The perception out there is that Sayoff benefits its member-led organizations from the board more so and more directly than its people that don't have members on the board, which my call to make this right is that either they put a board together, a true voting board, that every member organization has a sitting member on it, and not like some, not all hockey directors are on the board of directors. No. The executive board either has a representative from every organization, or if you are the hockey director or tied to an organization, you do not get a voting interest in the executive board of Sayoff. Because if you are sitting on if you are leading an organization and sitting on a decision-making seat at Sayoff, you have a conflict of interest and you will always benefit your organization. And I'm not going to call out your names, but people go to Sayoff's website and look at whose name is on there a lot, and that organization and what they get. And that's the perception. That's what happens. And that's who screwed us those 2 years in a row. So this smells just like that, Kev. And that's why I'm so frustrated, because just when I think Florida hockey is getting better and they're doing things, and I wanted to talk AAA today, and we're running long, so we're going to put a pin in the AAA talk, and we'll definitely do a show next week, Kev, and talk AAA hockey, because I do think they're doing good things there. But just when I think we're making inroads into the hockey thing, shit like this creeps up, and I feel like it throws us right back to where we were 5 years ago.
If the adults could get out of the room and just let the kids play, let the politics go aside. No one gives a shit if you win 10U, 12U, 13U, 14U, 16U, maybe. No, you know, your kid's getting to the end, 7 to 18. Like, it's about the times in the car. It's about the times going to practice. It's about what do they learn on the ice? What do they learn from their teammates? What do they learn from the coaches that they had? You know, adults ruin it for everyone. I mean, if we all go back to really being kids again, life's not too shabby, you know? And, you know, I've got the joy of seeing my younger brother with three young kids, 9, Jakey's going to kill me, 6 and 3, and he builds an outdoor rink up there for them, and there they are. When, you know, like, it, that's the beauty of it. Let them go on out there, learn something, let them go exercise, you know, don't put pressure on them to try and make the NHL. Let them be athletes, let them have fun and sit back and enjoy, have a cocktail, have a cocoa, have a whatever, because it goes quick. Like, everyone says it goes quick. It goes quick.
You and I are sitting here doing this show, and it's 2026, right? And I didn't know you 5 years ago. Like, we didn't even know each other, right? And like, and then, you know, Sully hit your radar, and thanks to Sammy Terrell, we've been on the show a bunch of times, you know, because Johnny and Sammy, they're a division behind you and your son. So we always played the leapfrog game together, not together. So one of the years we got together, it meshed. And then you know, we've been together and then played together and then started doing the show, and everybody I hang out with in my circle. I mean, we just had a golf weekend a few weekends ago, 4 hockey dads. We're planning our golf spring golf trip, 8 hockey dads. Like, it's my circle is hockey dads, and our circle is mostly hockey couples that we get together with and go to dinner and hang out with and whatever. And my wife's best friends are hockey moms. And remember, we moved to Florida in 2018. We've only been in the state 8 years. We didn't know anybody. And the sport is what got us the connections, and the sport is what got us our friends. And now we have great friends. And I'm still great friends with a small number of my North friends that I go see. And I mean, hell, Kev, we landed in Manchester at the airport, whatever, the 22nd, I think, or 21st or 22nd of December. We landed in Manchester at 6:30. Those friends, the Bishops, we had Nick on the show. He plays for Londonderry High School. He had a game in Hooksett that started at 7:30. We literally got the luggage, got the car, stopped through Pizza Man, which if you're from New Hampshire, Pizza Man, great sub shop in Manchester, and it hooks it. Swung through and got subs and went immediately to the rink. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. And stopped in and watched an entire high school hockey game and hung out with those people. Stayed after for him to come out of the locker room so we could see everybody, yada, yada, yada. And then went and, you know, went to the house and whatever else. But like, that was our first stop, was hockey. And it was those friends, because that's what this sport does. And those are the connections you make. And that's what this is all about, guys. So to bitch and moan that you lost a game, and you play the team 4 times. That's 4 losses out of the season, right? Like 4. Like you could go 12 and how many games they play? 18, 14-4. Like you could be undefeated and this kid joins that team and he beats you all 4 times and you're still 14-4, and that's a hell of a season, and you still go to states and you still make a run, and you never know, and you play the games to play the games. Because if you're sitting there going, yeah, but we're the best team and he beat us, so without him, we're going to win. It's not the same win. Go win when it's hard. Go win when it's difficult. Go win because that's what it's fun about it. And honestly, no one remembers, ourselves included, Kev, our best memories, get in the car, Jeff. That's the best memory of our time together, and has nothing to do with the ice and has nothing to do with the wins and losses. I mean, it's you forgetting to put Sully back in the net. Yeah, it's you forgetting to put Sully back in the net on an empty netter. Like, I mean, that's what this is about.
Those things, and to you're listening to two guys that now have kids that are, you know, mine's going to be 20 this year.
Yep,
dude, it's crazy how fast it goes, and the times you have in the car, and the times you have with the buddies. There's, you know, 19 years old, they're still playing knee hockey. It's freaking awesome. Like,
well, and you know this too, Kev, because you. Well, I was gonna say, you know this because you travel up there to go see Carter, watch him, and like obviously Sully's been gone for a couple seasons now. Once they strap it on and hit the ice, the game's the game, right? It's a game we've all watched and coached and whatever. But I know you feel this way. I don't feel as connected to him in the game or as connected to the game because I don't know the parents. Because half the time the parents aren't there, right? Maybe there's 3 or 4 sets of parents when you go see the game, right? Yeah. They're from all over the place. The boys are in their own bubble. It's basically, you know, I'll use the term professional hockey, you know, junior C, junior A, tier 3, I get it. But they're on a bus, they're in the room, they're taking care of themselves, they're doing their own thing. They don't need mommy and daddy. They're not coming to find you. Like the best thing was last season. That's it. And the best thing was last season where they came out of the locker room after the game as a whole team, and the community waited for them in the lobby, and it was a picture take. Like that was the coolest thing to ever be a part of. And like they still do it this year because a lot of those kids moved teams when that team folded after last season. So I get that. So you get more to see the boys and I get to talk to them more. And honestly, doing the show has allowed me to get closer to them because we interview them and I get in the locker room and I get to mess around with some of the interviews and stuff. But like, other than that, I turn on the TV and I watch the games on TV and I text him and he says, thank you. And that's it. And now that's my entire interaction with him in the sport. So like when your kid's 10 and 12 and 14 and you're got the 2 games, and you're in the parking lot and you're going to, I don't even know where do they go anyway, Whiskey Blues or Hooters or wherever the hell you take the team in between games and Applebee's, do the thing and
whatever, hang out
at whatever. Like that's the best it's going to get, guys. Cause once they get older, and I hope all your kids make it and play at a high level, you're going to find out that when you ship them away, and especially if you want your kid to be the superstar, you're going to disconnect from them a lot earlier, about 14 or 15.
Yeah.
And they're going to be gone and you're going to literally just be a money person and a phone call. And that's going to be it. Right. And you're going to lose that connection with them. So So please, to Kevin's point, guys that have been through it, take it from me. The bullshit that we get to vent about now, because that's all we have about Seyhoff and whatever. When you're in the moment, be present with the boys, with the kids. I'm sorry. We talk a lot of girls hockey. I didn't mean to disrespect. Be present with the kids. Be present with the team. Be present with the other parents. That time goes so fast and you cannot get it back once it's gone. So just forget about this extra BS and just enjoy the ride.
A very small percentage make it. Very small. Not to say your kid can't, but I will remember my dad saying, like, you have to learn to work with other people that don't think or do things like you do. That's called life. And that's exactly what the beauty of the game is. It's an international sport, and you get to go and learn to work with different people and see how they think and communicate with them. And, you know, communication's everything. If you're just going to be a wallflower as a hockey player, I'm sorry, you're not going to make it. You got to teach. You got to ask. You've got to ask for help. You know, you name it. You got to ask your coaches. It's, you know, that's the beauty of the sport. You get to meet people from all over the world, and they love the game just as anyone, except for Canada as we go into the Olympics.
Yeah, well, I think that's a great stopping point, Kev. And as your shirt alludes to, a blind squirrel every once in a while finds that nut, and you just found a great way to end it.
It so, sure does, buddy. It sure does.
Hey, appreciate the conversation. Great topics today. Great talk. Great insight on getting, you know, behind the boards and having that conversation. So appreciate your time as always, Kev.
You as well. Hey, parents, enjoy it. One more time. I'm going to reiterate what Jeff said multiple times. Enjoy it, because we're at the tail end, man. We are. That's one of those things. It's crazy talking to the parents that are, you know, our age and kids our age. When you're in it, you're not in it. You keep thinking, you know, everyone says it goes fast. And then next thing you know, here you are doing a podcast.
Just like the show. You start listening to it and you think to yourself, wow, this goes fast. And then it's over. So the next time we'll talk some AAA hockey. We'll get into the Olympics and we'll just keep running. But until then, enjoy yourselves. Enjoy the ride.
Best luck the rest of the way. Regular season is almost done. Finish strong. I don't care where you are in the league. Finish strong, because someone's always watching. Just so you know, someone is always watching.
Great advice from the one and only Kevin. And they absolutely, you never know who's watching. Next year's teams are being formed. Ideas are being made. Be on the list. So absolutely, Kev. Appreciate you. We'll talk to you later. Cheers.
Right back at you.